to attacks on one of Saudi Arabia's largest oil fields in the world's biggest crude oil stabilization facility, U.S. President Trump said American forces are locked and loaded. Yemen's Houthi rebels did take responsibility for the attacks, but they are often backed by Iran, which the Trump administration places the blame. AP's Ben Thomas explains.
The U.S. government is releasing satellite imagery showing what officials say are at least 19 points of impact from the drone strikes at two Saudi energy facilities. Senior U.S. officials, speaking on condition of anonymity to discuss intelligence matters, say the images are consistent with attack coming from the direction of Iran rather than Yemen. The officials say additional devices, which apparently didn't reach their targets, have been recovered and are being analyzed by Saudi and American intelligence agencies. Ben Thomas, Washington.
The International Committee of the Red Cross will be able to resume humanitarian work in Afghanistan after the Afghan Taliban walked back a ban it imposed on the ICRC and the World Health Organization. In doing so, it restored its guarantee for the security of the ICRC staff. The Taliban imposed the ban in April, alleging the two organizations were conducting suspicious activities connected with their vaccination campaigns. The September 15th statement did not mention the WHO. Forecasters say that the east coast of Florida will likely escape damage as Tropical Storm Humberto is expected to remain well offshore through Wednesday. Now it has strengthened into a hurricane in the Atlantic and is forecast to strengthen even further during the next 48 hours, according to the National Hurricane Center. Earlier, the forecasters had said that it was already moving away from the Bahamas, which is still reeling from Hurricane Dorian. This is VOA News. More violence in Hong Kong Sunday as protests that started over a now-revoked extradition bill entered into the 99th day. Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda.
Protesters in Hong Kong threw bricks at police and Molotov cocktails on Sunday, capping another weekend of violence in the city. Police responded with water cannon and tear gas. The protests are in their fourth month. The withdrawal of the controversial Chinese extradition bill that sparked the civil unrest hasn't stopped it. Instead, it's morphed into broader demonstrations against Beijing and erosion of the island's autonomy. Protesters are also pleading for help from the West.
That is Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda reporting. Democratic lawmakers warned President Trump on Sunday that any proposal on gun control must include a House-passed bill to expand background checks or else risk no legislation at all. AP correspondent Julie Walker.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer say they spoke by phone with President Trump, who told them he was working on a gun plan. Schumer says while he's holding out hope, he's not expecting anything.
Right after a terrible tragedy occurs, he says we have to do something on background checks, and then he backs off. And the word is that the NRA and others are putting pressure on him, and the thing that he will go for will not be acceptable.
He's also pushing Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to let the legislation go to the floor for a vote. McConnell has declined to hold a vote on background checks, saying it's not clear Trump would sign the law. Julie Walker, New York.
The World Health Organization is calling for urgent action to end bad health care practices responsible for killing millions of patients around the world every year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva on the findings of a report issued by WHO in advance of the first World Patient Safety Day, September 17th.
The World Health Organization reports 1 in 10 patients is harmed in high-income countries. It says 134 million patients in low- and middle-income countries are harmed because of unsafe care, leading to 2.6 million deaths annually. WHO notes most of these deaths are avoidable. Nilam Dingrakuram is WHO Coordinator of Patient Safety and Risk Management.
In the healthcare facilities on the system, there is a lack of patient safety culture. So lack of open communication, lack of systems to learn from mistakes and errors.
Besides the avoidable and tragic loss of life, patient harm leads to economic losses of trillions of dollars globally each year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, September 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Tunisians await results from Sunday's presidential election.
When I was deciding, I eliminate first the persons who I'm not convinced with, that I think that they cannot lead Tunisia.
We will speak with the presidential candidate of Guinea-Bissau's largest political party ahead of November's election. Protests greet Guinean President Alpha Conde in the United States ahead of the UN General Assembly. And Liberian President George Weah wants the advice of the legislature on establishing a war crimes court.
I see it as a dream come true for all the campaigners of War Economic Crimes Court, for all the members of the Claims and Petition Committee, all the members of the Judiciary Committee, those that have been working outside the legislature, civil society organization.
Zimbabwe doctors accuse security forces of kidnapping the leader of their association and a family funeral today for the late former Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe. Those stories plus Samson Omale's polls are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Tunisians are awaiting results from Sunday's presidential election. Early and unofficial results suggest two outside candidates are ahead. The vote and October's legislative elections are considered key democratic tests 8 years after the country's revolution. Lisa Bryan reports from Tunis on the vote and the challenges ahead.
A steady stream of people filed into this primary school, lining up under posters offering instructions on how to vote. 19-year-old college student Yamna Elbena is excited to be voting for the first time.
I'm going to vote for Mulu for many reasons. When I was deciding, I eliminate first the persons who I'm not convinced with, that I think that they cannot lead Tunisia.
That's Abdel Fattah Mouro from the moderate Islamist El Nahda party, running to replace 92-year-old President Beji Kaya Desepsi, who died in July. Mouro's part of a dizzying lineup of presidential hopefuls, including two women, among them government ministers, far-left politicians, and jailed media tycoon Nabil Karoui. A runoff is expected after next month's legislative elections.
Parce que là, l'expérience, les jeunes. On le connaît très bien.
Zohra Gumeit voted for Prime Minister Youssef Chahed. He's got experience. He's young, she says. We Tunisians know him well. The other candidates are just upstarts. But with Tunisia's economy sputtering and unemployment high, others are looking for new faces outside the political establishment.
Il est un ami, donc je peux pas trahir mon ami. Il n'a pas l'éloquence nécessaire.
Retired professor Mohamed Sami Nefati voted for a friend of his, 61-year-old law expert Kais Said, who opted for door-to-door campaigning instead of large rallies. He isn't eloquent, Nefati says, but he's got a chance because he's honest. But other Tunisians stayed home, disappointed by the state of their country and skeptical that any of the candidates can turn things around. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Ariana, Tunisia.
Guinea-Bissau's political parties are preparing for presidential elections in November this year, their first since the introduction of multi-party politics in 1991. Domingo Simoes Pereira, presidential candidate for the PAIGC, the country's largest political party, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the party's vision for the country if he wins.
I believe that we have a wonderful problem with Iraq. So the question today is for the person that is elected, and I hope he's me, creates the positive environment for the program to be implemented.
What's one of the best economic plans about Tarawanka, just as an example?
I'm excited about the fact that we're able to divide the sources of growth from, let's say, natural values that you want to conserve. So in 36,000 square kilometers, you have to be very careful of not mixing up your sources of growth and the elements that you want to conserve, which means that when you reach the point of exploiting your natural resources, you know what to do and you have the capacity to do it.
The elections, do you think they'll be held on November 24th?
I hope so. the international community that is following is concerned about that. And that could be a great help.
What's your program for the country if you're elected?
Stability. Stability. Bringing unity back to the country. I mean, we are losing it. This was a very united country at the beginning of the new administration in the 70s. We were still to build a nation. But now we went backwards. So we have to restore that confidence in each other, in working together. We are divided by all factors, religious, economic. We lost it somewhere, so we have to restore it.
Do you think you're a contentious figure to restore unity, or do you think you can get the country behind you?
I think I can get the country behind me. I try not to be influenced that much by the happenings from 2015. Roma was just an incident. So I cannot relate my thinking, my political thinking, my philosophical existence in people like Roma.
That was Domingo Simoes Pereira, one of the leading candidates in Guinea-Bissau's upcoming November election. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Bissau. Liberian President George Weah has asked the country's legislature for advice on establishing a war crimes court as recommended by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and the recently concluded National Economic Dialogue. Moses Garcia will report from the capital of Monrovia.
This is the first ever gesture by a Liberian political leader since the end of the country's civil war and the recommendation by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to try people who bore the greatest responsibility for atrocities committed during the civil crisis. In a communication to House Speaker Bofa Chambers, President Weah noted that accountability for past human rights violations are essential ingredients for sustainable peace and achievement of inclusive development. Mr. Weah said that a national consensus from the National Economic Dialogue pointed to the full implementation of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission recommendations. It seems most lawmakers appear to concord with President Weah's request, but House Speaker Bofa Chambers asked the lawmakers to revert to their constituents for consultation. Rosteddin Swakogo Dennis, chair of the Claims and Petition Committee of the House of Representatives, is one of the lawmakers who has been in the forefront of the establishment of the Special Criminal Tribunal.
I see it as a dream come true for all the campaigners of War Economic Crimes Court, for all the members of the Claims and Petition Committee, all the members of the Judiciary Committee, those that have been working outside the legislature, civil society organization.
But Representative Dennis said she was unhappy about the manner in which Speaker Chambers handled the communication without consulting her committee, which has done more work around the War Crimes Code.
Sending it back to the communities, to me, is like repetitive. Whenever we have a repetitious situation on such a sensitive matter, there is a little bit of scary.
The legislature has received different petitions from civil society groupings calling for the establishment of War and Economic Crimes Court in Liberia. But President Weah and his government had said they were not a priority for the overall development of the country. Siri Allen, once a close ally of detained former President Charles Taylor and now a ranking member of the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change, has a different view about establishing a War and Economic Crimes Court in Liberia.
In my opinion, I think the War Crime Code is not inimical to our national development effort. It's not inimical to complying with the rule of law in our country. If it's required, if it's not only a witch hunt to handpick a certain people, if it's a broad-based concept that's going to be fair, open, and transparent, like you say, then it is a welcome idea.
The Liberia Truth and Reconciliation Commission heard testimonies from victims and perpetrators alike of the crisis. The TRC made 207 recommendations, including the establishment of a special criminal tribunal to prosecute people who committed major atrocities. Former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who testified before the commission, failed to take action on the commission's recommendations. For VOA News, this is Moses Garcia reporting from Monrovia, Liberia.
Today is Monday, September 16th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Protests have greeted Guinean President Alpha Conde in the United States ahead of the 74th United Nations General Assembly. Organizers accused Mr. Conde of trying to engineer a third term after his current second and constitutionally mandated final term ends in 2020. Mr. Conde has yet to address the allegations, but Information Minister Amara Sampare says the Prime Minister is having consultations throughout the country, after which time the President will speak on the matter. Talibi Bar is Vice President for Foreign Relations and Communications of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party.
Alpha Conde is not here just for the United Nations. He is here to campaign for getting a third term in direct violation of the Guinean Constitution. According to the Guinean Constitution, in the Article 27, Article 154, no one should have more than two terms with 5 years for each term. That means the second term of Alpha Conde is supposed to end in October 2020. Now, Alpha Conde has already mandated his prime minister to do a consultation to be able to change the Guinean constitution for him to get another term. Now, the good thing about that, the Guinean community, we have already organized our first demonstration in front of the State Department. That was this past Wednesday, September 11. We informed the head of the State Department that Alpha Conde has the intention to violate the Guinean constitution to get a third term.
One of the arguments that you, the oppositions, have made is that the president has refused to hold parliamentary elections, which is indirect intent for him to stay in power. I was told by government officials that before the president left Guinea, he made a speech to say that the election will take place before the end of the year.
The election we're talking about here is the legislative election. But let me remind you that the legislative election was supposed to be held back the beginning of this year, the first trimester of the year 2019. That has already passed. At this time, the legislative officers are there illegally. They were not supposed to be there. It's almost a year since this legislative election was supposed to be done. It has not been done. But can you believe we are almost 3 months to the end of the year? He's asking the electoral committee to organize the election. Those people are not ready. We do not have a clean registry to be able to organize that election.
Talibi Ba is the Vice President for Foreign Relations and Communications of the Liberal Bloc Party in Guinea. He was speaking with us from Columbus, Ohio. Guinea's Minister of Information says protest for or against the government is part of a healthy democracy. As Zimbabweans continue to digest the legacy of the late former President Robert Mugabe, his supporters and family members will today, Monday, have their day to mourn and celebrate his life, where his body will lie in state at his rural village in Kutamba, Zvimba, Mashonaland West Province. Gep Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service has this report.
The body of former Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe did not make it to his rural home in Zvimba on Sunday, as initially announced, disappointing hundreds of mourners who had gathered at his homestead in Kutama to pay their last respects. The spokesperson for the Mugabe family, Leo Mugabe, said he received a call from the village chief informing him of the change of plans, but he confirmed that the body will be at the homestead on Monday.
He's going to be brought to Zuma tomorrow, and thereafter, he will then be taken back to Harare on Tuesday.
The actual burial of the late leader who died in Singapore last Friday is yet to be determined, pending the completion of a special construction site at the National Heroes Acre, requested by the family.
He will be preserved one way or another, until and up to when the burial site is ready. If it takes 10 days to finish, then in 10 days we'll bury. If it takes 30 days because government told us it would take 30 days.
Rejecting criticism of opulence and insensitivity by making such a request, given the poor state of the economy and hardships Zimbabweans are enduring, Mugabe said the decision-making body of the ruling ZANU-PF party, the Politburo, offered and they accepted.
Listen, it's the Politburo offered to do it. Who are we as a family to refuse that assistance?
While the cost for constructing the site is not clear, analysts say such an imposition by the government on taxpayers is irresponsible. Bulawayo-based analyst Tumisani Nkomo called the government's decision scandalous.
Health facilities are struggling, schools are struggling, infrastructure is falling apart, and you want to spend millions of dollars on the dead. Really, it's a scandal of the century.
Editor of the weekly Zimbabwe independent newspaper, Tumisani Muleya, said the decision by President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to foot the bill for the burial site was more a survival move than show of allegiance to Mugabe.
Government and the ruling party, ZANU-PF, they are desperately trying to make sure that Mugabe, who was the ideological and intellectual leader of ZANU people for a long period, 40 years, that he is sent off properly in order to avoid a complete rupture between the Mugabe legacy and the new ZANU-PF leadership.
As preparations for Mugabe's burial stretches on and hundreds continue to pay their last respects at various locations, many have stayed away, holding on to their conviction that Mugabe failed Zimbabwe as a leader. Linda Masarira, the founder of the opposition party Labour Economists and African Democrats, said Mugabe caused a lot of suffering in Zimbabwe.
A lot of Zimbabweans are still suffering from what I say Mugabe is, and where a lot of people were subjected to a lot of brutality, state-sponsored violence, poverty, no salary payments, joblessness and everything else. I just could not find myself going to console such a family.
In response, Leo Mugabe, the family spokesperson, contends Mugabe was a good leader and that history will serve his memory well. Meanwhile, mourners in Mugabe's rural home area of Zwimba are now awaiting their turn to celebrate the life of one of their own who, they say, gave them a sense of pride and accomplishment. Reporting from Washington for VOA Zimbabwe Service, I am Kips Dube.
Striking Zimbabwe doctors are accusing government security forces of kidnapping the leader of the doctors' union. The Hospital Doctors Association said it had not heard from Peter Magombiye since Saturday night. The doctors have been on strike demanding pay increases. Zimbabwe police say they are investigating the allegations but suggest a third force may be involved in the alleged kidnapping. Dr. Mtabisi Bebe is the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. He says Zimbabwean security forces have a responsibility to protect the rights of all Zimbabweans to freely assemble and associate.
I can confirm that the acting president of Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association has been reported to be missing since the evening of yesterday. It is said that he was brutally taken away and abducted by unknown men in a town in a suburb in Harare. It's called Udiriro, in the dark of the night. And ever since then, it's now close to 24 hours. And they haven't had any news whatsoever in regards to his whereabouts.
We understand that the union or the doctors' union is accusing government security forces of abducting Magombiye. Is that true?
Yes. The abduction of Dr. Magombiye comes after a series of similar acts of abduction that have been occurring since the beginning of this year. We have seen that all these abductions, necessary police reports were made, necessary legal counsel was made, but we never got any answers or any updates on what security apparatus has done to investigate the persons who are behind these abductions.
Zimbabwe police say they are investigating the accusations that you have made, but they don't rule out. They are also questioning whether there is a possibility of a third force that is being involved in the alleged abductions for political expediency. Meaning they are saying that maybe this is an attempt by you, the doctors, to continue the human rights abuse narrative, particularly ahead of President Emmerson Mnangagwa's visit to the United Nations.
Yes, like I said, that the abduction of our 18th president, Peter Magombiye, is coming at a time after there have been similar acts of abductions in the past. And I think from that perspective, we can tell that this is not the first case of abduction that has happened in the country. And we think that it is their responsibility that they have to make sure that every citizen in the country is safe and their rights to freedom of expression, the right for freedom of association, and the right of freedom of assembly are secured.
Dr. Mthabisi Bebe is the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Denmark, where Kenya's Geoffrey Kamawuro broke the world half marathon record by 17 seconds in Copenhagen on Sunday when he won the IWAF Gold Label Road Race with a time of 58 minutes and 1 second. Kenya's Bernard Kipkorir finished second with a time of 59 minutes, 16 seconds, while Ethiopia's Berahanu Wendemu Sego was third, a further 6 seconds behind. The 26-year-old Geoffrey Kamawuro made a winning return to the Danish capital where he won his first World Half Marathon title in 2014, breaking the previous record of 58 minutes, 18 seconds set by compatriot Abraham Kiptum in Valencia last year.
I think this is my third time to be in Denmark, and I'm really grateful for that chance. I remember Denmark very well since 2014 when I won my global title, a gold medal in World Championships. And I'm really excited and happy to race back again in Denmark.
Staying with athletics, Olympic 800 meters champion Kasia Semenya will be officially awarded her gold medal from the 2011 World Athletics Championships at this year's edition in Doha, but will not be there to receive it. Semenya was elevated to the gold medal position 2 years ago when Russian athlete Maria Savinova, who sped past her on the final straight, was later disqualified for doping violations. The South African athlete had hoped to defend her 2017 World Championship title in Doha starting on September the 27th, but was forced to withdraw with no verdict yet delivered in her appeal to the Swiss Federal Tribunal against testosterone regulations imposed on her. In cricket news, the first T20 international between India and South Africa in Dharamsala has been abandoned without a ball being bowled due to heavy downpour. The field was full of water on Sunday because of the gloomy playing conditions. The toss round also could not take place. Both teams will be headed to Mohali for the second T20 international, as India will be looking to get their first win in the Punjab city on Wednesday, September the 18th. Lance Klusena is South Africa's Protea batting coach.
The biggest challenge really in playing in India is dealing with the conditions, and that's just not necessarily the wicket, that's the weather. There's a lot of things you have to deal with, and you know, USL, well, you deal with the conditions.
And now to football news. The CAF Appeals Board on Sunday rejected the appeal by Wydad Athletic Club with respect to the second leg final of the Total CAF Champions League 2018-2019, thereby upholding and confirming the decision of the CAF Disciplinary Board on the 7th of August. At its meeting at the CAF headquarters in Cairo, the board underlined the fact that the absence of the video assistant referee had no legal effect whatsoever, and that its sole purpose is to aid the referee to take the correct decision. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, September 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Oh. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews. Ooh. Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.